part of what moved me to get into the research that produced this book was a dissatisfaction with, on the one hand, the media's frequent equation of the Christian right and people like Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson with the whole of evangelicalism. And on the other hand, I thought a hole in the scholarship, the professional scholarship that focused on some traditions within evangelicalism while excluding others. So I went in search of a way to tell the story of a tradition that ranges really from pacifist Mennonites to tongue-speaking Pentecostals.
And from Billy Graham to Jerry Falwell, for example.
That's right. That's right. Or, you know, a number of more liberal left-wing theologians that you're less likely to have heard of. And so, you know, in figuring out a way to define evangelicalism that would allow me to include all of these folks, I found myself moving away from a checklist of doctrines because I came to realize that they simply disagree on so much. Even things we take for granted as somehow the essence of evangelicalism, like the born-again conversion experience. Well, it turns out plenty of the conservative Protestants that I wanted to label evangelical don't necessarily agree on what that looks like or if such an instantaneous conversion experience is even necessary. So I found myself focusing instead on questions or worries that they have in common and have shared, I think, really for centuries.
Some of those worries you characterize as this, two of them especially. One is reconciling faith with reason and heart with head.
That's right. Evangelicalism as a historical phenomenon, which is how I think about it because I'm a historian, really came about in the aftermath of the Reformation and at a time when the Enlightenment was beginning to take shape in European culture in all of its various forms, at the same time as pietist, very heart-driven religious revivals were also sweeping through many of these Christian communities. I see evangelicals as really a quintessentially modern tradition in that they have, from their very origins, tried to reconcile the authorities of both modern science as it was beginning to take shape, modern reason, as well as increasingly strict ways of understanding the Bible and the authority of personal spiritual experience as well.
Here's how you describe what they were seeking then and are seeking now. And you say, quote, they craved an intellectual authority that would quiet disagreement and dictate a plan for fixing everything that seemed broken with the world. They did not find it and are still looking.
Yes. Well, there were major consequences when, you know, Martin Luther initiated the series of church and political and cultural upheavals that threw off the authority of the Vatican. To some extent, then, Protestantism has been always riven by problems of authority. But those problems are particularly acute for evangelicals because they have distanced themselves from the strong church institutional structure that some Protestants came to kind of put in place of that Roman authority and have shown a propensity for schism, for radical individualism, which I think is really at odds with our and I'm speaking, I suppose, on behalf of kind of the secular liberal outsider, the caricature of evangelicals as these zombies who all walk in lockstep behind their pastor and unquestioningly obey, you know, that authority or a particular reading of the Bible. It turns out it's much more complicated. And I think that tug of war has really framed and driven a lot of the political phenomena that we associate with the culture wars and the rise of the Christian right.
You also take issue with critics of evangelicals who accuse them of being anti-intellectual, and you take issue with that.
Well, I think it is an epithet that we need to really investigate and take seriously, and we can't simply toss it
off. Not everyone agrees it's an epithet necessarily.
I think that most evangelicals would find that my book is pretty critical of their traditions, but also takes them seriously as thinkers. And so I wanted to consider what we actually mean when we call evangelicals anti-intellectual. And I think what we mean is that they don't play by the rules of secular intellectual discourse. Every conversation has a set of rules. You know, both parties have to agree to respect the same standards of evidence. We have to agree to make our arguments based on data that everyone involved can understand. And so in the context of, say, a secular university, to participate, you have to obey the rules of the Enlightenment. You have to use empirical data that, you know, your partner and colleague who may be of a different religious persuasion can access. You have to be willing to submit your arguments to peer review, to the judgment of your professional colleagues, not the judgment of a church. You have to keep aside any personal spiritual witness or anything God may or may not be telling you. And evangelicals have been very uneasy historically with obeying those rules. Although you see, as you investigate how they've built their educational institutions, they've often tried to have it both ways. They've often tried to earn the respect of secular intellectuals while also keeping true to their sense of their Christian mission. And I think it's really in their juggling act, their effort to balance both those authorities, that we find them engaging in anti-intellectual behavior.
Here's what you write about. You say, quote, "The evangelical imagination has been both an aid to intellectual life and an agent of anti-intellectual sabotage. It offers no clear path past the impasse of biblical authority, no firm discipline for the undecided mind, and no reconciliation with the intelligentsia of secular America."
That's right. I don't think that there's an easy solution. I think that this tension that I've described is an abiding fact of evangelical communities. But I think that to really understand the history of ideas, the backstory to the headlines about politics, we have to appreciate the diversity of evangelicalism and see that the tradition that produced, say, Pat Robertson is not the only game in town. And what I see happening, particularly among young evangelicals today, is a resurgent interest in other perhaps forgotten or mislaid theological traditions that offer very different prescriptions for how a Christian ought to relate to politics, for example. I see young evangelicals.
You call this the emergent church.
Well, that's one iteration of it. This movement or community, it's hard to know how to describe it, called the emergent or the emerging church of young evangelicals, millennials, and maybe a little bit 10 years on either side of that line, many of whom grew up in suburban megachurches, really steeped in Republican politics. Increasingly frustrated with their parents' version of evangelicalism, increasingly irritated that people assume if they identify as evangelical, they must vote a certain way. And so in some cases, they are exploring Anabaptist theology or exploring the Wesleyan tradition, which historically had a more broad-minded and, you could say, a humble attitude toward the limits of human knowledge, a suggestion that maybe the individual Christian has to look toward history and take guidance from tradition and personal experience to understand Scripture. So I see a lot of interesting kind of theological experiments, some even looking to the Catholic tradition. You know, what can we learn from Catholic monks and liturgy, a richer liturgical life, all as ways of really carving out a plausible future for, you know, an evangelical subculture that has got to increasingly get used to the fact that they are not the moral majority anymore. They are a counterculture, increasingly, in a pluralistic America where a lot of the polls on these hot-button culture war issues are trending away from evangelical orthodoxies.
Well, you've said that your book is not about the Christian right, but I think it does reveal a lot about a movement that the Christian right certainly grew out of. And for that, it's really, I think, a great addition to our thinking about modern politics as well as about modern religion, Molly.
Thank you very much.
I have been speaking with Molly Worthen, who's a historian from the University of North Carolina, and we've been talking about her new book. It's called Apostles of Reason. Well worth the read. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.